Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success. Today, we are joined by Dr. Joy Wiggins, founder and executive director of Joy Wiggins PhD LLC, a consulting company focusing on equity, inclusion, and social justice. She received her doctorate from The Ohio State University. Also joining Dr. Wiggins is Dr. Cami Anderson, founder and executive director of Bilingual Brown Babies, a company focusing on fostering bilingualism in black families. She received her doctorate from Howard University and is the author of Language, Identity, and Choice. And their new book is From Sabotage to Support, a New Vision for Feminist Solidarity in the Workplace. And ladies, thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And you're both more than welcome. Thanks for your time. Looking forward to being informed here today. So for starters, if you would, a good place to start. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and let's kick things off with that.
Well, as you said, I am the founder of Bilingual Brown Babies. I have a background in intercultural communications. So I do a lot when it comes to how we see ourselves in various places and looking at culture from a perspective of everything from workplace culture to ethnicity to age, and how all of those different positions really play a part in how we're able to interact with others or not interact with others. So a lot of what I do is about that, and that's part of how Joy and I came together.
Right, and this is Joy. So for us, I think I had initially found some workplace issues when I was at a university in Texas. And so I first figured out that women actually sometimes sabotage each other. And so I decided to do a TED Talk on that and then start my business with really looking at implicit bias, how we're socialized, and all the different ways in which we may navigate the world based on the ways that we were socialized. So much of my business has a lot to do with looking at relationships in the workplace, and particularly among women, but also across many differences. So that could be gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, race, et cetera.
And certainly do appreciate the background on yourselves. Most appreciated. Now, Dr. Anderson, if you would, what inspired you to write this book, From Sabotage to Support?
It's actually funny because the conversation started in the most international of places. We met in Spain a few years ago, and just kind of looking at the makeup of the group that we were a part of, it was professional development, and it was majority women, and just kind of the two of us on our own looking at the interactions between us as women, and then being able to really talk through some of the things that we saw versus some of the things that the other might have seen, that I might have seen, some things that Joy didn't. And we came back to the States. We started working on grants to be able to kind of talk through what does it look like to have different types of interactive environments when it comes to those sorts of things. And it morphed into this, a publisher came to Joy asking her about being able to do this book about From Sabotage to Support. And she said, oh, I've got to do this with Cami. So she called so that we could be able to work on the project. And it just went from there.
And Dr. Wiggins, is the concept of women stabbing each other in the back to get ahead just a cliche, or is there some truth about that? Get into some of those details.
Well, I think, you know, we really definitely want to debunk this cliche that women are naturally going to stab each other in the back. It goes back to this mean girl syndrome that happens in elementary and middle school. And what's actually at play here is that there is toxic environments in which it breeds this idea of sabotaging one another. So it's not that women are really trying to do this to each other, but when there is a environment of usually very patriarchal notions of competition and that we are not all going to get leadership positions. So if you think of it like a ladder, and we know that the top of the ladder is a CEO, those leadership positions, the second rung is, you know, maybe some management positions. But we know as women, having done this for so long, seeing that, well, I'm usually the only. If I'm the only woman up there, or if there's only one person of color, we know that that becomes a competition to get to that second rung of the ladder. And so that ends up becoming a toxic environment. And it becomes a way of competing with one another rather than collaborating and pulling each other up. And this usually happens when it's a toxic work environment, when promotions are not clear, where people are being evaluated based on personality and maybe not productivity. There's many different reasons for why the toxicity happens. So we really wanted to look at how do we debunk this idea of women sabotaging each other. We have to name it to talk about it and then to stop it. And a lot of that happens along racial lines, ethnic lines, gender orientation and identity, sexual orientation and gender identity, and just among many differences, age is another one. So we just really wanted to show women what does sabotage look like? And it's not trying to demean women or trying to say, oh, look at this thing that we do. It's really like, where is it coming from? And how can we stop and actually come together in liberation and transform our workplaces so that we can become more collaborative and we can help each other up that ladder rather than pushing each other off?
Excellent feedback, Dr. Wiggins. Thanks for that. Now, do you think women more than men wind up self-sabotaging themselves at work? Why or why not? And what can we all learn from this situation?
As Joy was saying, you know, because of the way that some of the work environments are steeped in patriarchy, there are some ways where it could be perceived that women are being more at the suspect and victim side of sabotage, because men don't necessarily see themselves as being attached to it. That's the thing that the women do, when it's not necessarily the case. Everybody in the workplace really does perpetuate those systems that allow women to be able to feel as though they are in competition, that they have to be first and only, that they have to be able to hold on for dear life to whatever position of authority or power that they might have in the workplace. Everybody is a contributor of that. So I don't think it's more so women. I think everybody does, just because of the ways in which we reflect our experiences of that through our gender identities. It can look different, but I don't think there's a scale as to who does what more.
And certainly have appreciated the information so far today. We are speaking with both Dr. Joy Wiggins and Dr. Cammie Anderson. Their new book is From Sabotage to Support, A New Vision for Feminist Solidarity in the Workplace, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, how can leaders improve conditions for women in the workplace? And also, why should they? That would be the first question. And isn't there a compelling business case for inclusion and diversity? Get into that a little, if you would.
I can talk about how we can transform the workplace, and then Joy can probably speak a little bit more to what that means in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some of the ways in which we can transform the workplace is by being able to stand in solidarity, help other women to be able to thrive, being able to provide appropriate recruitment and professional development programs that specifically address some of these issues that are steeped in patriarchy, i.e. sexism, racism, and those other types of practices, so that we can be able to name them in a way to create spaces for folks to feel as though they're not alone in the workplace and that their experiences have a name and also a value to it, so that we can be able to start to do something different. And a lot of ways that can happen is through being able to have things like affinity groups and things of that nature, because that really does speak to people feeling as though they fully and completely belong, and not just as role, but as person in the workplace.
Right, and I think, too, when we show up as our authentic selves, we're better able to be innovative, and we're better able to express ourselves and use our voices to show that innovation and to say, hey, listen, have we thought about it from this perspective? If someone is feeling that they are stifled or silenced at work, they're less likely to contribute, and they're less likely to be their full selves, where that creativity can come in and be tapped into. And so when we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion, we also have to really understand how are we all showing up in the world, and how have we been socialized according to our race, our gender, our age, you know, each of these identities. How does that actually affect the way that we engage with people at the workplace? And so if we don't really look at that and really start to examine, how do I show up as a white woman in relation to my coworkers who might have very different experiences and very different challenges than I have, that I might have blind spots to that? So when we start to look at those relationships and the ways that we've been socialized to show up in the world, then we're better able to transform our workplaces and work on the recruitment and retention, like Kumi is saying, and look at, well, how am I showing up in this employee resource group? What do we really need? And if we're really listening to one another, then our voices have to be heard, and they have to be able to reflect our values and the company's values in ways that we can all innovate in these really great creative ways.
Now, taking this even further, how can women in the workplace be better to each other?
What needs to happen is we have to really understand the collective history of who we are as women. I think it's really important that we have to understand that with our different identities comes different challenges. And it's not just enough to say, oh, yeah, I know that you're a Latinx woman, or I know that you are an Asian woman, or I know that you are a Black woman, so you had some things that I might not have experienced. We have to really understand what that means in terms of how that affects their interactions with us in the workplace, how that might affect their productivity in the workplace, and really taking the time and the intention to really learn what are some of the ways in which power and privilege shift and changes because of our different identities and different challenges, and being able to really start from that place of knowing that history so that we can be able to move forward into something that is more progressive into the future.
Also, I'd like to get your thoughts here on this. Is the experience of being a woman in the workplace different for women of color? Touch on that.
I think that there are some ways in which all women bring their own identity baggage into work. And that identity baggage looks very different depending upon what your identity might be. So for using myself as an example, as a Black woman, it's not just the fact that I'm bringing in the PhD that is behind my name. I'm also bringing in the microaggressions that I might have faced when I was in my doctoral program. It might be the places where I might have been lauded or the places where I might have been questioned. All of those things come with me into the workplace, and it does indicate how I'm able to work with folks. Same holds true for another part, for a woman that might not be of color. For a white woman, it's the same sort of thing. What were some of her experiences that she might have had during her own program when she comes into this workplace, so that, and all of those things dictate how we interact with each other. It could be something as small as a negative encounter with a professor who might have been a white male, or it could be something that might have been a positive encounter with an Asian woman that might draw us to being more apt to give leniency for them because of our positive experiences that we might have had in the past. So I think being able to understand that identity baggage that we carry with us, it's not a bad thing, but it is something that has to be acknowledged. It's not this invisible case. It's not an invisible cloak. It is something very real that needs to be seen and acknowledged in the workplace.
I was just going to say, as a white woman, too, we also talk about when you are doing something and you might have committed a microaggression or something, it's important to apologize and to understand that cultural humility is really important in interacting with anybody, and that your view of the world may not be necessarily reflected by other people, and to kind of use it as a kaleidoscope and say, oh, wow, these are different experiences that other people are having. How can I start to understand that a little bit better? It may not ever be my experience, but how do I get to understand that person in a way that they're showing up in different ways than I might have showed up? And what are some of the challenges they may be having that I have not ever had before?
And ladies, looking at the workplace in general, what's an example of a great workplace today? Are there any out there that you could share?
Well, I think there are great workplaces, and I was actually asked this question quite recently, and what do we do for women who are looking for great workplaces? So there's many websites. There's also Fortune and Forbes all list different companies that are great to work for. But I think the best thing to do is to talk to people, because, you know, a company can have great diversity and inclusion, you know, talking points on their website, but that may not be actually what they're practicing. So the best thing to do, I think, is to find people that actually work for the company and to find out, is that really their experience? And so that's going to be more research on your, you know, on your part. But it's important, because there's a lot of times where folks are saying, oh, yeah, this is a great place to work. However, when you get there, they may have been able to recruit people and recruit women and women of color, but to retain them is a totally different story. And so how really investigating and researching, okay, what are the recruitment and retention policies? How are people actually recruiting? What are their their steps and those policies and procedures that are keeping people in the workplace, and how long are they working there for? And I think that's really important. So rather than saying, okay, this company is great at that, it's really what's your individual needs as a worker, and how do you then tap into the other resources of the employees that work there so you can actually make sure, is this the right place for me?
Ladies, can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us here today, and also for taking the time to write the book, From Sabotage to Support, and for all the information shared here today on the program. As we conclude today, obviously we want all of our sons and daughters to experience true equality in the workplace. Can you talk to us about what that would look like to you in the future, and are we close yet as we conclude today?
I think we are. I think the fact that, you know, even with the traction that our book is getting is showing that there's a way that folks see that there's a need for us to be able to have this. And if we do things like starting in elementary school, what does it look like to be supportive in elementary school? How do we teach boys and girls to be supportive of each other? How do we make it so that there's healthy competition and not the competing for the A? Like, how do we set up systems in the school so that when they get older, it's second nature for them? They already know how to do it. There's no need to teach anything because it's always been something that they've done. It's always been something that they've practiced. And that's how that evolution begins to occur.
Dr. Wiggins and Dr. Anderson, thanks so much for joining us here today on the program. I'm sure listeners want to know where they could best get for information on the book as well as yourselves online. Where's the best place to gather these details?
Well, mostly your local bookstores are great. Barnes & Noble, Amazon is a great place. And also our collective websites, Camille's is CamilleJAndersonPhD.com and mine's JoyWiggins.com.
And that certainly works, and we'll leave links within the show notes of this broadcast. Again, ladies, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Much appreciated.
Well, thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
And you're both more than welcome. We've been speaking with Dr. Joy Wiggins, founder and executive director of Joy Wiggins PhD LLC, a consulting company focusing on equity, inclusion, and social justice. We've been also speaking with Dr. Cammie Anderson, founder and executive director of Bilingual Brown Babies, a company focusing on fostering bilingualism in Black families. She is the author of Language, Identity, and Choice. And their new book is From Sabotage to Support, a New Vision for Feminist Solidarity in the Workplace. And for all the details, simply visit joywiggins.com or CammieJAndersonPhD.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7. Around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.